From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Authentic and John Velasquez have the lead as they come down to the 16th ball. Tis the Law still trying to get him. Authentic, Tis the Law, here's the buyer. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
Gamine in the final furlong, now at the 16th pole. Gamine, John Velasquez, rolling on home to win the Breeders' Cup. Filly and mare sprint all. Gamine.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Swiss Skydiver digs in at the rail. Authentic on the outside. These two putting on a show. The Derby winner and the filly. Swiss Skydiver inside. Authentic outside. They're nose to nose. All the way to the wire. And it is going to be a photo finish.
Here's Whitmore striding forward for the lead in the final furlong of the Breeders' Cup Sprint. What a day in the career of this 7-year-old. Whitmore, Errod Ortiz Jr. have won the Breeders' Cup Sprint.
Now, here's Anthony Stabile.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, filling in for the Baron of the Backstretch, Mike. Mike will actually be back next week. Originally supposed to be here for 3 weeks. Mike's going to come back in just in time for Cigar Mile Day. Mike has been known, like myself, to enjoy a cigar or two. In my case, a cigar or a dozen. So Mike will be back just in time for the final Grade 1 of the year in New York. They ran the last Grade 1 of the year in Kentucky yesterday. The Clark went to one of racing's bad boys. It's amazing. When you think of bad boys in racing, Bodie Express certainly comes to the top of the list after unseating jockey John Velasquez at the start of the 2019 Preakness Stakes and running around there without a jockey. He got plenty of publicity for his antics on Preakness Day. It wasn't the first time. It wasn't the last time he pulled some antics, but yesterday he pulled off the Grade 1 win, his first win outside of South Florida, namely Gulfstream Park West, the Old Calder, which closes its doors today. Sad to see Old Calder go away, but they closed their doors today. And this weekend, a lot about closing weekends all over the country. It'll be the last weekend of the year at Churchill Downs, and they had go out with a bang. Stars of Tomorrow card today. Single six payout tomorrow, mandatory payout. We'll talk to Ben Huffman. Ben will actually kick off the show. We'll talk to Ben about what's been, of course, and this is the theme, it's been an unusual year, obviously, and Thanksgiving weekend upon us. Always a great weekend of racing, and this weekend so far has proven to be a fantastic weekend of racing. Two more big days left, stakes all over the country. Aqueduct, Churchill, and Del Mar. Both Churchill and Del Mar wrapping things up this weekend. But a lot of good stakes. We still have Cigar Mile Day to come. We still have some other great racing to come this year, some other great ones, and great racing all around. But you look back this year, and Thanksgiving weekend has a little bit of a different meaning for everything we've all gone through this year as individuals and as an industry. And the fact that we've gotten to see these fantastic race meets pull off, right? A little bit of a shorter meet. It wasn't even in the spring at Keeneland. It was a summertime Keeneland meet. And then Churchill being able to pull off everything, including a postponed and delayed Kentucky Derby, a delayed Preakness over at Pimlico in October, a delayed and shortened Belmont Stakes up here in New York. You're just grateful that everything was able to happen, and I think a lot of people felt we'd have seen a whole lot more change due to the COVID-19, when in fact, I think everybody seemed to work together, especially the folks down in Kentucky. I think they deserve the virtual round of applause for letting everybody take a piece of that summer racing. Ellis Park acquiescing to Keeneland for a bit, as well as Churchill Downs for the Kentucky Derby week. Kentucky Downs getting involved. And everybody, Keeneland, Ellis, Churchill, everybody really just getting along for the greater good. And I think that was very important. I have said this countless times. I will continue to say it countless times. As an industry, did not miss a day of racing throughout the COVID-19 outbreak. Yes, some tracks were forced to close for a bit, postpone some races and some cards, but there was a thoroughbred racing card run every single day in North America this year. You could say, and you can legitimately say, this year, from January 1st on, we have run at least one thoroughbred racing card in the United States, and I just think that is an unbelievable achievement when you look at all of the other major sports, all of the other businesses. I mean, yesterday, historically, has been Black Friday throughout the country. Day after Thanksgiving, stores opened up. We got to a point a few years ago where the stores were opening at 4 o'clock on Thanksgiving Day. And Black Friday was not the same yesterday. I did a little driving around, did a little travel. No, there was nobody on the road. Stores were not as packed as they ordinarily were. I can tell you one thing, though. There was a full slate of thoroughbred racing yesterday. We ran races well into the night here on the East Coast. And again, just a real feather in the cap to the greatest game they play outdoors, and everybody's done a fantastic job this year. I know we were talking about it on Thanksgiving here in my home. I am thankful for being a part of one of the, if not the greatest industry in the country. Get to go to work with a bunch of people who share the passion, and it's just been great. And of course, we couldn't do it here on the Horse Racing Radio Network without you folks tuning in each and every day for the coverage. We got a fun show for you again this morning. As we look ahead, though, Bobby Newman's going to join us later on to talk about a little stakes, but he kind of said something right after the Breeders' Cup wrapped up. When you look ahead to the last 2 months of the year now, 8 weeks, if you will, you realize, especially when we're covering everything, you know, we have the race day program during the week, the weekend stakes preview on Friday nights, in between the call-in show, trainer talk, all the great programming here on the network, including the Equine Forum, you realize that there is still a lot of good racing left after the Breeders' Cup wraps up. So that's today's poll question. And you can reach out to us at HRN on Twitter. There are, in my opinion, three big days, weekends after the Breeders' Cup. Is it Clark weekend at Churchill Downs? Is that your favorite? Clark, of course, won yesterday. KJC Goldenrod today, first future Derby pool open. So is it Clark weekend at Churchill? Is it Cigar Mile Day next Saturday, about a mile and a half from me at the Big A? Or is it what some feel to be the start of the next year? I know I feel that way. I know Bobby feels that way. Opening day at Santa Anita, traditionally held on December 26th. Last year it was pushed a couple of days, but traditionally the day after Christmas, opening day at Santa Anita. So is it Clark weekend? Is it Cigar Mile Day? Is it opening day at Santa Anita? Hit us up on Twitter at HRN. You can vote. We'll read some of your comments on the air a little bit later on during the Equine Forum. Speaking of the Equine Forum, Ben Huffman, Vice President of Racing, going to join us from Churchill Downs. He's the Racing Secretary as well. Trainer Dale Romans has Smiley Sabatka and Sitting on Go pointed towards today's Kentucky Jockey Club at Churchill Downs. Dale's going to join us. He's got attachment rate here at Aqueduct as well in the Grade 3 Discovery. Our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris, is our good friend Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends. We had Libby Imperial from the BCCA last week, Michael this week, just to talk about a couple of fantastic charities. Michael, going to talk about Old Friends as we get closer to the holiday season. They could always use some help down there at Old Friends. Graham Motion has a raid of the Del Mar Stakes going on. He's going to send Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies turf winner from last year, sharing out to try the older fillies in there for the first time in the Grade 1 Matriarch tomorrow afternoon. And trainer Hugh McMahon celebrated his 1,000th victory last Sunday at Laurel. Hugh's going to come on to talk to us about his career and about that special milestone down at Laurel. You got the poll question. You got the lineup. When we return, we will bring you Ben Huffman, the Vice President of Racing and Racing Secretary at Churchill Downs, to talk to us about a fun closing weekend, Stars of Tomorrow card today, yesterday's Clark, and just what it's been like to handle the racing obligations in one of the most unusual years you will ever see. Of course, all eyes on Churchill Downs, usually the first Saturday in May. This year was the first Saturday in September. We'll talk to Ben about all of that when we return. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Code of Honor's ready to roll in behind horses sixth. Silver Prospector's launching a wide run from seventh, five wide there. By my standards, Owendale's coming with his run, launching a rally six or seven wide. It's the field. It's the top of the stretch. Mr. Freeze turning for home in front. Bodie Express to the attack. Code of Honor switches outside. Owendale's rolling down the center of the track. Coastal Defense is coming up the rail. There's one furlong to go. It's Bodie Express in front. Here comes Code of Honor and Owendale. Coastal Defense and Mr. Freeze. But Bodie Express is bounding by the 16th pole. And he's holding on. And Bodie Express wins the Clark. Holds off Code of Honor to win it by a length. It's tight for third. Coastal Defense or Owendale. Mr. Freeze was fifth.
Next thing you know, Hidden Scroll will be winning a grade one. Bodie Express getting the job done in yesterday's Clark at Churchill Downs. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Nice enough to join us now, speaking of Churchill Downs, Vice President of Racing as well as the Racing Secretary. Tell you what, those are a couple of tough hats to wear, especially at the same time. Ben Huffman joins us now. Good morning, Ben. Thanks for some time this morning here on the Equine Forum.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Glad to be here.
What a year, huh? I mean, as I've been leading off a lot of interviews with that question because it leads to a 3-minute answer. But I mean, what a year!
It's been an unbelievable year, and I kind of had a feeling you might touch on this. And there was no playbook for a year like this for any racetracks across America, and it's been challenging. And just thinking about what our horsemen, our trainers and grooms have had to go through all year long, and just to be able to race, which we're very lucky. But yeah, uncharted waters here, and I don't know, we got to take our hats off to these horsemen that 7 days a week, the hoops they had to jump through all year long at every racetrack to keep the show going. So it's been unbelievable, and we all want this to end and some way somehow get back to normal soon. It's been a challenge for a lot of people.
I think that's a great way to put it. There's no playbook for this, right? I was thinking about this. How long have you been doing this now? You've been doing this 35 years?
Yeah, at least 30. Yes. Over 30.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've been well traveled in your career. We've seen equine herpes outbreaks that have forced some shutdowns and so, at the very least a blow to a horse population. Right, I remember back here when I was a kid in the late 80s, there was a jockey strike for a couple of weeks. Billy Fox rode 49er to win the first ever Cigar Mile, back then the Naira Mile. There are different kinds of stoppages, and we've, as an industry, we've worked through all of them. Obviously, no one's ever seen anything like this.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you guys have done an amazing job from day one. I mean, the move to postpone the Kentucky Derby, I mean, could not have been one that was either easy or one that was taken lightly.
No question about it, and that was very difficult. Because just the Kentucky Derby, I mean, it's not just Churchill Downs in a race. I mean, it's so important to the city of Louisville and the state of Kentucky. And, you know, there wasn't a playbook for this, and we tried to do the right thing, and, you know, there was going to be ripple effects when we announced where we were going to run our race. And, you know, we talked to as many people as we could to try and working together and NBC, and ultimately, you know, we just had to make a decision. And, you know, and just one thing to think about, you just can't, with, you know, 175,000 people come to the Derby, you just can't reschedule that on a whim or delay it a few weeks, just the whole ticketing process. And it's an animal what it is. And so, you know, we just did the best we could with everything. And, you know, was not easy.
And in your roles, you have a vast amount of responsibility, because not only do you have to worry about getting the product to a point, not only do you have to present the product to the governor and okay, this is our plan, you have to then, you play a big role then in going to actually card the races as the racing secretary. So your hands are on this from 5 a.m. till 6 p.m. At some point, does a guy like you, again, all of the experience, hands involved, do you take a step back, look at the game plan, and say to yourself, how are we going to make this work under these circumstances?
Well, the whole team over here, that's how it was, because the game plan kept changing literally by, sometimes it was days, sometimes it would change two or three times within hours, dealing with, and my superiors were the ones dealing with the health department and the governor's office. But that was a daily, hourly task from March, mid-March, or whenever this thing heated up. And the playbook kept changing. Every time we had a plan and where we thought we're going forward, it had to change because something was struck down or not agreed upon. But we just kept, okay, no one kicked and screamed. Let's come up with another plan that'll satisfy everybody. Because ultimately, whatever we have to do to start racing, whatever we have to do to open the barn area to allow horses and grooms back. So it was methodical. It was frustrating, but the team up here, they just kept rolling with it. And the end goal is whatever it takes to get to, for everybody to be able to race. The owners that pay the bills on these horses, we want them to be able to race for some purse money. And we as a business want to operate, and because that's what we do. But no, it was sometimes hourly the playbook would change, all spring and summer leading into September. It was wild. and, you know, we're still racing, and I don't know that I've had a chance to, you know, just kind of take a few minutes and think back, because we're still trying to get through through the fall meet, and it's just been a wild year, an absolute wild year.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That was my next question, actually. You know, a day like today, the Stars of Tomorrow's cards, a fantastic idea. I mean, dozens of horses literally going to head to the post today. A sensational 12-race card highlighted by the two grade twos. You're in the middle of the first Kentucky Derby future pool. You got the single six mandatory payout tomorrow. Run a few under the lights today. I always love that aspect of Churchill Downs, since you guys added the lights a bunch of years back. Will you get to enjoy a little bit of today? Will you get to take a look? I mean, you got to be excited between yesterday and today. Yesterday, of course, you get one of the favorites from the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies in Simply Ravishing to come back in just 3 weeks to run in the Goldenrod. You get a couple of horses from the Juvenile in the KJC. And yesterday, you get Owendale, you get By My Standards back, a couple others as well. You got to be real excited and happy to get all of that participation from the Breeders' Cup, having been run just 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, no question. This is a great time of year, typically anyway, in Kentucky, with starting with the Thanksgiving Day card, Clark Day, leading into Stars of Tomorrow today, and these full fields today. And when you look at the maiden races, they're all jam-packed, all the connections, all the riders, leading trainers, the pedigrees. And, yes, it is exciting. In truth, yesterday, standing out on the rail watching the Clark under the lights last night, in a way, when they turned for home and there was about eight of them that had a shot, you know, that was the first time in a long time I actually had goosebumps. And yesterday, watching that Clark, was exciting. And it's like I did have a chance to really take that all in, because, again, this whole year it's just been so much, you know, pandemic, COVID, mask wearing, mask police, and just to keep the thing going. But I actually enjoyed the races yesterday, especially the Clark. That was a wild turn for home and a good run to the line. And so, yeah, I'm pumped up just since yesterday. It just seems like we've been all working so hard. Sometimes we forget about the actual racing and the product and the horses, but. So no, and today's card's outstanding, and with all these 2-year-olds, and it's going to be a big day today.
Yeah, a lot of fun on the card. That the Goldenrod comes up a real good race. Brad Cox has a couple in there. Coach and Travel Column, who certainly coach is a perfect 3-for-3. Travel Column, who knows what happens in the Darley Alcibiades over at Keeneland. If she doesn't break a little slowly, maybe Simply Ravishing doesn't get the lead that afternoon. You also have a very interesting second-time starter in Steve Asmussen's Clarier. She looked really good, daughter of Grade 1 winner Cavorting. And then, of course, you have the favorite, Simply Ravishing. You know, you're in Kentucky, obviously, all year for work. Kenny McPeak and Robbie Alvarado, that's been some story this year, those two guys.
No question about it. And I loved how Alabama just kind of restarted Robbie's career. He'd been struggling. He had a rough year or year and a half, but that's been a great story. And his career is rejuvenated just with one race and one guy sticking with him and counting on him. And it's worked out. Very talented jockey.
Yeah. And then later on in the KJC, you get, I'll tell you what, you and the guys and gals in that racing office got to do a good job. You have the most talented maiden in the world going in a grade two. He's 6-5. Keep me in mind. He could have went in a couple of maiden races today. He's going to go take another shot in the stakes company. I feel like he may be a little bit more vulnerable than Simply Ravishing, if you will. But both of these races, you get 10 fillies in the Goldenrod. You get 8 or 9 colts and geldings in the KJC. Both of these races have come up really, really nice. And, again, some Breeders' Cup participation in both.
Yeah, they're deep races in this jockey club. I mean, you've got a little bit of everything. You got some of these guys that want the lead. You got some that look like they might be deep closers. So I think there's going to be a bunch of them at the wire. I really do. This is a wide open race. And I know Keep Me in Mind is nice. He's still a maiden. It's highly unusual to be in a grade two race like this with a maiden, but he showed up. He tries every time. He brings his run. So, I mean, he's a quality colt. But, you know, I think the race is wide open. I see through four or five of them that I wouldn't be shocked to jump up and wins.
Now, ordinarily, a little breather would be in store for Churchill, but now you guys have a little involvement at Turfway Park, and that racing starts right away next week. And, of course, hopefully everything is back to somewhat normal next year. And on May 1st, we're going to spring the latch on the first Saturday in May for the Kentucky Derby. Always looking ahead to Derby, right? I know that they've already put some, you guys have already put some parameters in place for Derby Day.
No question. We're looking forward to May 1st. You know, still a lot up in the air on how many people will be able to come because this thing's not over. Hopefully by then, February, March, we might have a little more clarity. But, no, we'll be running the Derby on May 1st, regardless of the situation, as long as we're allowed to. And hopefully this will help to where we can have as many people as possible at the Kentucky Derby. I think the racing community needs this, the country needs this, and it's all big sporting events. We have to get back to normal or as close to normal as soon as possible. Just everybody is struggling in this pandemic. It's just been very difficult on everybody across the country and across the world, really. But as soon as we can, the Kentucky Derby's kind of right of spring, and hopefully, you know, we'll get back there with a bunch of people. I mean, I don't think it'll be 175,000, but if it's, 50, 80, something. But we can't wait, and we just got to get back to the Kentucky Derby back to the first Saturday in May. It's very important for a lot of people.
You've done a great job at Churchill. You've done a great job in Kentucky, basically getting everybody and each other through what has been a wild, wild season. You know, just Churchill and Kentucky Downs and Ellis and Keeneland all working together through the summer and into the fall to put on some fantastic racing. How's my favorite PA, Abby, doing?
Oh, she's doing good. Getting ready to go to Ocala for the winter. Getting ready to go to Ocala and ride some babies. So she's pumped up.
All right. Well, Ben, thank you again for everything. Great job.
You're welcome.
Great job as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Keep up the good work, okay?
You too. Thanks, Ben. One and only Ben Huffman. Ben, yeoman's work down in Louisville and Lexington. He goes back to Keeneland as well, and Ben Huffman has done a great job. He's been a big and a key player in keeping racing going in the Bluegrass through this COVID-19 outbreak, and hats really go off to Ben, a real legend down in the Bluegrass State when it comes to horse racing, over 30 years in the industry. Speaking of legends, it's time now for the Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you by the Lexus Store of Lexington.
This is the story of a man who was unquestionably one of the very best in the annals of thoroughbred racing at plying his trade in the saddle. His accomplishments as a reinsman were not only noteworthy, but they were watermarks among the riding colony on two continents. The sands of the racing hourglass are poured back to the late 19th century to begin this odyssey. The subject of this dissertation first saw the light of day in Cadentown, Kentucky in 1883. He rode his first winner in Chicago in 1899 on a horse called Abenstroke, and he subsequently rode in this country with unrivaled success until 1903. In 1901, he piloted the winner of the Kentucky Derby on a horse named, perhaps fittingly, His Eminence, and the winners of the Latonia Derby, New Orleans Derby, and the Memphis Derby. In point of fact, in his abbreviated American riding career, he had but four Kentucky Derby mounts, but never finished out of the money. He won that classic in back-to-back years aboard the aforementioned His Eminence, and in 1902 with Allen & Dale. He was third while in the saddle aboard Thrive in 1900, and was second aboard Early in 1903. He rode 161 winners in 1901, a total absolutely unheard of in that day and age. He often said the very best horse he ever rode was McChesney, a horse conditioned by Sam Hildreth. He eventually had a great deal of trouble making American riding weights and opted to cross the big pond, so to speak, to ride in Europe, and there he experienced measured success until 1930. He first rode in Russia, where he won the Russian Derby twice and finished second in that event four times in 6 years while under contract to Mr. M. Lazareff. From 1910 to 1912, he rode in Austria-Hungary for Prince Lubomirski. He then returned to Russia, where he rode from 1913 to 1917. He won the Russian Derby 3 years in a row, 1914, 1915, and 1960, for Leon Montshev, who at the time was one of the wealthiest men in the country. Our man left Russia in 1917 at the inception of that nation's revolution being led by Messrs. Trotsky and Lenin. When he was to leave that country, he went to bid his friend what was to be a fond farewell. Many years later, in 1941, he learned that his friend and benefactor, Mr. Montachev, was washing cars at that time for the Nazis in Paris. The story of our subject's escape from Russia in 1917 would provide more than ample fodder for Jean Le Carre's novel. Many times before escaping to Poland, he crawled on his hands and knees for hours to avoid being shot at by the Bolsheviks. In 1920, he left Warsaw for Paris, and he wound up there riding for Mr. Montachev until 1926. He rode his last race in 1930 at the age of 47. Compositely, he rode over 2,300 winners in this country and in Europe, and he once rode 8 winners out of 11 mounts in Moscow. The vast majority of his victories were scored aboard two-year-olds because he always hustled them out of the gate, rated them, and then saved something for the finish. European riders, on the other hand, went hell-bent for leather throughout and had nothing left at the end. He always felt, although never able to explain why, that collectively, Australian riders were the best. Our man turned to training in France in the 1930s with horses in training at Maison Lafitte near Paris. When the Second World War broke out, he was forced to disband his stable and he turned his property over to the French government, which quartered 200 soldiers there. Then, after France's quick defeat, he was forced to quarter Nazi soldiers. On February 25, 1941, he began another portion of his international odyssey that brought him first to Spain, then to Portugal, and finally back to his native America. Having been in Europe for some time, he was fluent in French, German, and Russian, in addition to English. He passed away in 1941 at the nonagenarian age of 91, with not only fond memories of the turf on two continents, but with a cumulative riding record that by any measure, means, or standards has to rank among the all-time best. His story has the very fiber of what a legend of the world of racing is all about. He was Jimmy Wakefield.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top five general sire by the number of two-year-old winners so far in 2020. and his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince's value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
At the quarter pole, the ride of a lifetime, turning for home in front. Midnight Bourbon to the attack. Notary gives way. Down the center of the track, Sitting on Go continues to close. There's one furlong left. Midnight Bourbon comes away with the lead. Sitting on Go continues to close. Here comes Sitting on Go, who's up for the lead at the 16th pole. Sitting on Go up over Midnight Bourbon and Superstock. Sitting on Go, 24-1. Over Midnight Bourbon, Superstock, and the ride of a lifetime.
Welcome back. The Iroquois went to Sitting on Go, who swooped the group on Kentucky Derby Day, came back to run the Breeders' Cup, kind of had a no-chance trip. That's what the old Sports Eye, for you old harness fans out there, the Sports Eye comment line would have said no-chance trip for Sitting on Go in that Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And now he wheels back in 3 weeks, try and get himself a win around two turns. He also gets back to the scene of that Iroquois Churchill Downs. He'll go past the Twin Spires later on today. He'll race under the lights today as well. That Breeders' Cup obviously was at Keeneland. But tonight, right around 6 o'clock, 5:56 Eastern time, sun's down, lights are on at Churchill Downs by that time. Heard Ben Huffman talk about the lights being on for the Clark last night. They'll certainly be on for the KJC, and we'll see. Now, Dale Romans has two entered. Should have asked Ben this. It's not like I didn't have the racing secretary on. Corey Lannery's named on both. I think this is part of the frustration with gamblers and horse players and fans alike. Different racing jurisdictions have different rules for this. So Corey Lannery is named on both halves of Dale's entry, Sitting on Go, and Smiley Sabatka. Dale also has Ultimate Badger entered in the race, but he is separate ownership, so not coupled with the other two. Corey Lannery is named on both. Here in New York, obviously this is my beat, my circuit, here in New York, one of these two horses would have to scratch. I do not know that to be the rule in Kentucky. I'm not sure if Dale is allowed to name a different rider before the races today. Here in New York, though, Corey Lannery was named on both horses. One of them would have to scratch, and we don't have to speculate anymore because trainer Dale Romans joins us now. He's got three in the KJC. He's got attachment rate up here in New York as well in the Discovery. Morning, Dale. Happy Thanksgiving.
Good morning.
Welcome to
How
the Equine
doing,
Forum. Man? Doing well. Doing well. What's the rule down there? Do you have to scratch one of these horses today because you named the same rider?
No, I can change riders. I can name somebody else. I still, it's getting a little late. It's kind of crunch time. I still haven't made a final decision. I want to talk to Jason Lucci in a minute. But there's a good chance we're going to run all three.
Okay. Very good. Sitting on Go, obviously the most prolific of these three. He was a perfect 2-for-2 going into the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. The Iroquois win, one of the more impressive wins on a weekend where speed reigned supreme. This horse passed a lot of horses and made up a lot of ground.
Passed a lot of quality horses to run like he did. I thought it was a huge race. And then go over to Breeders' Cup, you know, I'm not much of a whiner. You've heard me enough on the radio. But that track was not playing fair, in my opinion. And that the bias wasn't only on the speed. It was also, which goes hand in hand, it was speed and rail.
Mm-hmm.
And we were hung wide the whole way.
Yeah. I said before you joined us, no chance. The old harness, I would have said no chance trip. I mean, he really, the way that track was playing and the trip he pulled. And you know what? He made a little bit of a run on the far turn, but just kind of against it. Took a lot of money in it. Were you surprised? I know that's something you don't ordinarily pay attention to. He took a lot of money in the Breeders' Cup. He was under 10-1. And when you're looking at a big favorite like Jackie's Warrior, a lot of people like this horse, and I don't think there was anything to not like about his effort. I mean, he never had a chance, really.
He never had a chance. And you're 100% right. No, and the people did back him. I think that people backed him because his race was so impressive in the Iroquois. And the fact that he had trained so well, you know, and he was, all eyes are on you. You can't hide. And everybody could see how good he was doing.
How quickly after the juvenile did you decide to bring him back? I know he's had success. He broke his maiden and won the Iroquois just 3 weeks later. Same scenario here. You had the 2 months between the Iroquois and the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. How quickly after the juvenile did you decide to point to this?
Walking down to talk to the jock, I just knew that our horse had more in him. And Jason and I actually talked about the next day and said there's no reason not to run him back. You know, four races at two, that's a good foundation going into the Triple Crown Trail.
How's he been training, Dale?
He's training super. I mean, he's doing this. This horse has never had a bad day. I got about four or five Brody's causes over in the barn. They all are like that. I mean, Smiley Sabaka, same way. You just get up and go to work every morning. They're sound. They're smart. They do things right. And just like their daddy did.
Let's talk about Smiley Sabaka a little bit. Second in his debut in a dead heat sprinting. He came running that day. The day he broke his maiden, he was on an outside draw again. That was kind of that Keeneland profile. Didn't really change much. So that was opening weekend. It didn't really change much.
Yeah,
he was against it in every way, and he galloped.
He definitely went up against it all and still came on and won a race, a beautiful race. And I say he tries hard every time, too. His numbers-wise need to step up a little bit, but with two starts under his belt, I think that he's prime form to move forward.
I know you're always thinking Kentucky Derby, but as an Ontario bred, you always have some options with one like him. Maybe you go up north of the border and take down that Queen's Plate next year.
Wouldn't that be fun? That's something, you know, I've always enjoyed watching the races up there in the Queen's Plate's creme de la creme of Canadian races. So that'd be nice to go up there and knock that race
which
out.
One?
Definitely on the radar. You know, hopefully
which one
the pandemic's
of these
behind us and we can get around the world a little easier than it has been this year.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I didn't see you in Saratoga this year. That was one of my negative takeaways from the spa this year. We didn't get to spend any time together.
But I know. We didn't get to hang out. I spent 5 days there all summer. And you know, that's not my style.
No, that's not. I mean, that, you know, we'll talk about that in a minute. Which one of these would Corey ride? Have you decided that?
I'm sitting on Go. I mean, he's the most accomplished. Corey's ridden him. Oh. He'll stay on him. I don't know what I'll do with the other one. I'm trying to figure that out now. I was waiting to talk to you. My bud Nero's going to get down to some paperwork.
All right. We talked about those. Ultimate Badger. My man Bobby Newman likes Ultimate Badger a little bit. Bob's going to join me a little later on. He's won half of his starts. He was behind sitting on Go in that Iroquois, but he certainly seemed to have bounced back from his Iroquois effort with a couple of nice starts. Again, just a few weeks apart, and he got that win around two turns the second time he tried it last time out.
Ran a beautiful race last time. If you haven't watched it, go back and watch it. He lost the lead by half a length down the lane and came back on. He ran a great race. He's going to run big today. Nice horse. I don't know what happened to him in Iroquois last year. He just never got involved in the race. And I really thought he would run a huge race that day.
What's it been like? You mentioned it briefly, the COVID-19 and everything going on. What's it been like for you guys? You're someone that doesn't like to sit still, really. You like to go travel with your horses and spend the summer in Saratoga. You just said you were 5 days in the 40-day meet. What's it been like for you in the barn?
I think it's been like everybody. I think there's been hardships on all levels, business-wise, financially. But mostly it's mental. It's, this game's a tough game. And it's hard enough when things are perfect. But you know, I'm a social person like you. I like to get out. I like to do things. I like to be around people who want to talk about horses and travel with my horses. Like I said, I like being in Saratoga in the summer as a horse trainer and a racing fan. And it's just been a tough, long year. But it looks like now we got a little light at the end of the tunnel if this vaccine comes along for us.
What's the winter plan?
We'll be at Gulfstream starting down tomorrow. And again, like think of the logistics of this. We got 50 horses to move down, so I don't know how we dozens of people, and we got to have them all tested, and they all have to be within 5 days of arriving there. So it takes 2 days to get the test back. So you really got a 3-day window of what you got to make sure everybody gets in and gets settled in the Gulfstream. It's just been for everybody, it's a difficult time.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Talking with Dell Romans, he's got 3 pointed to the KJC today. Always got that Kentucky Derby on his mind and his radar. Up here in New York, the Discovery attachment rate. I know this is a horse, Dale, that you have been high on since day one. You chased the trail with him this year. He ran really well last time at Churchill, getting the money in the allowance race. That's his second win in 2 tries in the slot. He's going to get labeled a wet track horse at some point. And I know you do not feel that way about him. You think the world of this horse. He's in a field of 5 today.
Yeah, it's a short field. It's a good 5. It's good 5 horses. But, yeah, I've always loved this racehorse. And he's just sitting on that huge effort. He's one of those horses I think that you could see coming out of the Derby Trail like we see every year, turning 4 and hitting the big older horse races and becoming one of the top handicap horses in the country. It wouldn't surprise me if this horse is one of them. I thought, we gunned him to the lead a little bit last time, made him do some work early and get involved, and it seemed to really keep him focused, and we'll probably send him out of there today and at least keep him up in the race. And it's a good 5 horses. It's a good race, but I think he's going to run very well. He's up there with Carlos Martin, and he's handling things for me. Like I say, during COVID, we got to find different ways to do things, but I couldn't send a team up there, so Carlos, thanks to him for helping us out.
One of the best racing families to ever live, the Martin family. Yeah, Carlos does a great job. And, yeah, this horse really seemed to enjoy his work last time out. He was down inside. And like you said, I think his best races have been when he's been a little more aggressively handled early. And in just a field of 5, that shouldn't be an issue today.
No, it shouldn't be. We'll tell Jose to get him out of there. Get his mind not running and see if he can get the job done.
How was Thanksgiving? Was it good?
Yeah, it was a downer too, to tell you the truth. Tammy ordered some food from a local caterer. It was terrible. We didn't have our normal bunch of people. I have a house full of people on holidays, 50 people in here, and she cooks all the time. That was a downer too. So we need this thing to turn around for people like me and you. We like to get out and have a good time, and this is a better drag.
Yes, sir. All right, well, let's get the Thanksgiving bounce out of the way. Holidays are around the corner. We'll come back with a big buyer on Christmas Day.
Sounds good, buddy. Thanks for calling.
All right, Dale, thanks for some time. Good luck today with everybody in the KJC and in the Discovery. We'll see if Sitting on Go can take the next step on the Kentucky Derby Trail for Dale Romans and his team down at Churchill Downs. Thanks to Dale, as always, both Ben Huffman and Dale Romans will receive some apparel from EmbraceTheRace.com. Like all of our guests, embrace your passion over at EmbraceTheRace.com. We'll take a break. When we come back, the Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, comes up next. The one and only Michael Blowen, the founder of Old Friends Farm. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in, there's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 greatest stakes winners and more lifetime grade one winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and grade one victorious Valiance.
Valiance with the lead. Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judmont Spinster.
And two-year-old sensation, Essential Quality, winner of the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tap it, standing at Gainsway.
A message to help keep you safe. If doctors told us today that we'd made a breakthrough on COVID-19, saving thousands of lives, we would rejoice. Finally, a good news day. We'd feel less afraid that our loved ones would be struck by the invisible enemy. We'd start to feel hope that we could live our lives again. Well, a mask does all that. We can help protect others by covering our noses and mouths, which is how the virus mainly spreads. Masks are a ticket to freedom, to be out in the world, to getting together, back to work, back to doing what we want. If doctors announced we could save lives today, we would grab that breakthrough with both hands. While we wait for a vaccine, grab the breakthrough that's already here. When we're out, it's masks on.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But Sharon draws even as they turn for home. They're side by side and walk in Marrakesh, try to come and get them with Lucky Betty on the far outside. Sharon, a narrow lead, coming to the final furlong. She's now getting away by a length and a half. Sharon opens up by two. Hendy Woods is next. And then Lucky Betty on the outside. Sharon, Hendy Woods trying to make a late run at her. Sharon and Hendy Woods. Sharon in the Edgewood under Manny Franco. Hendy Woods was second. Lucky Betty was third in good spirit. Was fourth, 136.87 the final time.
The 2019 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies winner and the Edgewood winner, sharing back for the Matriarch on Sunday at Del Mar closing day. We'll talk to her trainer, Graham Motion, in just a little bit. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRN. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, filling in for the vacationing baron of the backstretch, Mike Penna. Time now for the industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris, and it is none other than one of my favorite people, man that has done so much for the aftercare of our equine warriors, the founder of Old Friends Farm, Michael Blum. Michael, thanks for some time this morning. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
We did, Anthony. We fed every horse on the farm extra carrots for Thanksgiving, and it was really quiet, of course, and we had a great time, and I really appreciate it. It was such a pleasure going around and having the honor to feed these horses their carrots for Thanksgiving.
How are things going down at Old Friends Farms throughout this year?
Well, you know, we've had to change things around because basically we're a tourist destination, and we have no tours now at all. We're completely closed. So that's been difficult financially. But a lot of our donors have really kicked it up. We've been able to bring some nice new horses in. So in the springtime, hopefully everything will be back to quasi-normal anyway, and we'll be able to let people in, and they'll be able to see many more of our new retirees that we've been able to take in over the last few months. I mean, the good thing is it hasn't affected the health and welfare of the retirees at all. They're just going about their routine every day, and it's been that part of it's been a lot of fun.
Talk about some of the new arrivals you just mentioned.
Well, we had a really, we have a really good relationship with Frank Stronach and everybody at Edina Springs. We've become kind of their quasi-official retirement home. So we just got a Milwaukee Brew and Silver Max and one of my favorite horses of all time, Awesome Again. And it's really great having Awesome Again here because we have two of his best children here. We have Awesome Jim, who I know you remember, and he's, sure, he's a fabulous horse. And then, of course, Game On Dude is a son of Awesome Again. So I tell people when they ask me that the reason we have them here is because of the economy. The old guys are having to move back in with their kids. So that's what's happened here, too.
How many horses we have down at the farm now?
Well, on this farm, we have 141.
Wow.
We have, I like to say, we have more stakes winners, I think, than any farm in history, and certainly more Breeders' Cup winners. We have the oldest living member horse who won the Breeders' Cup Classic in Alphabet Soup. He's 29 now, about to hit the old 3-0. And we have Stormy Liberal, of course, who won Breeders' Cup's Turf Sprint twice. We have Touch Gold, old rivals Touch Gold and Silver Charm way back from 1997 and their terrific rivalry. And Sarava, the longest priced horse in the history of the Belmont Stakes, 142.50. So, and they're all doing, knock on wood, they're all doing really, really well. And now heading into the winter, they're all really healthy and their feet look good. The Kentucky Shoeing School comes out and does all our trims for practically nothing. And John Park, Dr. Park over at Park Equine does so many things for us with colic operations and all sorts of other things involved with the horse care and never sends us a bill. So we're able to provide really, really good health care for the animals because of the generosity of so many people in the bluegrass.
All right, so talk about how can the folks out there donate? What are some of the ways they can donate? Give them all the info.
Sure. Well, you know, we're always open for donations, and there's many ways you can do it. You can check out the website, which is oldfriendsequine.org, and that will give you many opportunities. You know, some people, we have up on the site, you can see how much it costs for, it costs $4.25 for a square bale of hay, and so and $32 or $35, depending on the week, for a 50-pound bag of carrots. All the way up to, we have a really good relationship now with LNJ Foxwoods, who are retiring their broodmares to us. When their broodmares retire, they'll come to Old Friends. We've got a similar relationship with Bourbon Lane Stables, and probably in another month or two, we'll have a similar relationship with Mr. Oxley, with John and Debbie Oxley over in Midway, who've been supporters for a long time. And that's the way, you know, they gave us the money to build the paddocks and put in the waters and put in the running sheds, so that they want to really make sure that their old mares have a good place to come when their breeding days are over. So that's the way they donate. Everything up to, you know, $5. There are people that have some racing parties that donate things to us. We have people that have racing memorabilia that we can auction off. We're very active on eBay, trying to keep the cash coming in, and that's been very, very successful. Angie Dickinson, the actress, is donating 3 paintings to us that were given to her by Marge Everett, who ran Hollywood Park for those many years, and we're going to be able to auction those off. So that's the kinds of things, you know, people donate all sorts of things, and we try to maximize it, and then we're also very, very careful about where the money goes, because I really do promise people that we don't waste a penny here. It's all going to make sure that these horses get the retirement that they clearly earned.
And no pun intended, all of our old friends doing well. I know a lot of folks that listen to the network that I follow and follow me on social media, they're at the farm numerous times a year, and it's been a little bit of a different year. How's everybody's down there safe and sound?
Yeah. I mean, I'm one to look at the, you know, never mind half full and half empty. My glass is always overflowing. So there's no reason to get down on all this. You just have to adapt, do what you're supposed to do to make sure you're not spreading the virus. And actually, it's been quiet around here, and I've been getting a lot of rest with the diminishing, with no tours and everything, and I get to appreciate the horses all over again. It's just really been, it's been very good in that regard. But we miss the people, and I can't wait till we reopen and we get to show them all the new retirees and some of the older ones when we reopen in the spring.
You're the best, Mike. You're the best.
Anthony, you're the best. I really, really appreciate this. Thank you so much.
You got it, Mike. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great holiday season, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great, buddy. Thanks.
All right. The incomparable Michael Blown, what he has done down at Old Friends. Mike was, for those of you that don't know the story, it's all over the internet, but Mike was a movie critic for the Boston Globe and got involved over in the old fair scene up in Massachusetts, and it has grown into Old Friends with over 140 horses in Kentucky and Old Friends Cabin Creek up in Saratoga as well. And he just does an amazing job. And again, oldfriendsequine.org to make your donation. Hour number one of the Equine Forum could not have ended better than with our buddy Mike Blown. Hour two comes up next, but first we pause 10 seconds for station identification. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Improbable, then global campaign, Tacitus, tis the law, all behind Authentic, who strides away in the Keeneland sunset for John Velasquez. Authentic has won the Longines Breeders' Cup Classic.
Tis the Law's got a two-length lead. Dr. Post has moved up on the outside into second. Pneumatic is third, but it is the New York Hero, Tis the Law and Manny Franco, to win the Belmont Stakes.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Tarnawa is running fast down the center of the course. Tarnawa past Magical has caught Channel Maker. Tarnawa moves on by Tarnawa and Colin Keane to win the Longines Turf. Order of Australia looking for a huge upset here. Order of Australia gets that upset at 73-1. For Pierre Charles Boudot, who's having quite a Breeders' Cup.
Now, here's Anthony Stabile.
Hour number two of the Equine Forum about to come your way. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile. Normally, you hear the Baron Mike Penna. He's on vacation. He'll be back for Cigar Mile Day next Saturday here on the program. Thanks to our guests in the first half, Ben Huffman, Dale Romans, and Michael Blown from Old Friends Farm. Kick off hour number two here with Graham Ocean, who joins us now. Graham is a busy weekend out east, here in the east and out west, and sharing out for Sunday's Matriarch at Del Mar. A couple of others raiding the West Coast. Graham, it's Anthony Stabile. Thanks for some time this morning here on the Equine Forum.
Hi, good morning, Anthony.
We are, so I'm up in New York. I'm assuming you're in Fair Hill?
I'm actually in Palmetto in Florida.
Oh, okay. You've made the southern sojourn already.
We kind of spread out this weekend. So my assistant Alice went out to Del Mar, so I came down here to fill in for her. So we're spread a little thin this weekend.
We remember from 2011 the great embrace between you and Dale Romans after the Shackleford Animal Kingdom photo. We had Dale on earlier. He was talking about, you know, getting ready to ship south to Florida this weekend. You know, he's got 50 head going down to Gulfstream Park. You have outfits up and down the East Coast, sending horses out to Del Mar. Obviously, the COVID affects you like it's affected everybody else. Talk about the logistics and just exactly, like you said, you're down in Florida, Alice is out west. Just has to be a logistical nightmare at this point.
You know, it is and it isn't. I mean, I'm incredibly lucky that I got a crew that can go on the road and are very willing to go on the road. Alice has been kind of traveling all year, so she's got a bit of a system down. She went to England with Sharing. Lauren Mendenhall, who gallops her every day, she was at Fair Hill. She shipped with the filly. So you can't do this without a really good crew behind you. So I'm very fortunate.
And, of course, Maggie Kim at his home watching the Hallmark Christmas movies.
Holding down the fort, yeah.
All right, so sharing. Another solid campaign for her after the Breeders' Cup win last year. I guess Royal Ascot was kind of on everybody's mind. A nice return in the Teppan. You have made the trip over to Ascot, Miss Temple City, for our friend, for the Felds and our friends that own Miss Temple City. What was that like this year, not being able to go over with her?
Yeah, it was definitely an odd feeling, kind of a disappointing feeling. I think as much as anything, I was disappointed for the ownership because I've had a chance to do it and they haven't. And it's one of those things that if you get to do, you know, if you get to take a horse on a journey like that, you want to be a part of it and you want everybody to get the pleasure out of it. That's a big part of why you do it, you know. Obviously, you want to run well, but you also want to take in the racing and the ambiance and all that. So, you know, I felt incredibly lucky that we could do it. Again, I couldn't have done it without Alice, and it was great to be a part of it, but my disappointment was more for the ownership group that they didn't get to go.
When you make that decision to go over there, I think you kind of know, and obviously with the experience from Miss Temple City, that you're going to miss some time, you're going to miss some races here in the States, but obviously if the connections feel important enough to go over there. She came back. She didn't really miss as much time as some of the other horses that travel over to Europe and come back missed. And she ran really well in the Edgewood. She's kind of had a pointed campaign this year. I assume that was by design, knowing that Ascot was going to be smack in the middle of the year and you wanted to keep her fresh throughout the year.
Yeah, I mean, we knew by going to Ascot that we were going to miss a chunk of the summer. The trip out there, it's not so much the trip going out there that's tough, but it's the coming back that's tough. You can't fly back out of England. You have to go into Europe. You either fly out of Germany, France. I find that's a really tough trip for them coming back. But she handled it really well. You know, I'm so lucky that Anthony back at Gainsway and Aaron Wellman, you know, they've never put any pressure on me to run. So we gave her plenty of time after that. And, you know, I couldn't have been happy with how she bounced out of it, obviously.
Yeah. And that was leads to my next question. No pressure to run. She's won her last five in a row here stateside. Just the loss at Ascot. And she ran really well at Ascot. Along the lines of no pressure. Not really a Breeders' Cup race for her, I guess. So, Matriarch, really the next logical spot for her, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, ideally we would have gone to the QE2 at Keeneland. That was kind of our fall goal, if you like. She came out of the race at Churchill a little footsore. I've struggled with her feet pretty much since last year. She just has slightly oddly made feet, and she tends to bruise her heels very easily. And this really flared up after she ran at Churchill. So we ended up having to skip the QE2. But I feel like I've really got it back now, how she was before. And, you know, this was the next logical step. Obviously, it's a big step because she's going to run against older mares for the first time. But, you know, she's kind of at the stage of her career when she needs to be ready to do that. So.
And it certainly doesn't seem like you have to worry. I mean, I, of course, there are always inherent worries when you're going to a new course. But she's won a run well over the turf and main track at Saratoga, Laurel, Santa Anita, Churchill, and Ascot. So I guess no real concern, especially the fact that she did win her Breeders' Cup race out in Southern California, albeit on a different course.
Yeah, I mean, she seems to be one of those horses that you don't really have to make excuses for. You know, she puts herself in a good position in the race. And, you know, up until now, she's been good enough to overcome any issues. And she really doesn't have to take a racetrack with her. So, you know, part of that, too, is her disposition. I mean, she's such a kind, easy filly to be around and just such a pro, really.
Plan to keep her around in training next year?
Oh, I hope so, yes. I mean, that would certainly be in the plans, yes.
All right, we're talking with trainer Graham Motion, who has sharing tomorrow in the Grade 1 Matriarch. She'll tackle the older fillies and mares for the first time. We see your name in some of the other entries as well. Earlier on the Matriarch card on Sunday, Wooten Asset in the Cecil B. DeMille. He did not have... he has not had the best racing luck or the best trips in his first two starts here stateside.
No, and ironically, you know, one of the reasons Sol brought him over here was because we wanted to get him on firm ground, and he's had nothing but soft ground since he got here. So, and honestly, I feel like he's handled it well, but I think this gives him an opportunity to run on a firm turf course, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, Manny Franco going to ride for the first time, the Pimlico Bog, and then that bog at Belmont 4 weeks later. Certainly should be different conditions today out where the turf meets the surf. Talk about your relationship with Manny Franco. You were a guy that you and the barn really started riding him almost immediately. When you would ship him in, Manny would ride some horses for you and stuff, and then, you know, you got him his first Breeders' Cup win. You guys teamed up with Charing last year. Talk about your relationship with Manny.
Yeah, I mean, look, I feel like Manny's a little unlucky because he came around in the year of Irad and Jose, and he's lived in their shadow a little bit, but I think he's very much on a par with those guys now. I have a great deal of confidence in him, and I think it's remarkable, or it's neat, let's say that, to see how he's progressed over the last couple of years, and you know, I couldn't be happier that he's been riding Charing. You know, it was a shame for Manny that he couldn't go to England because of the whole COVID situation. I think he might have ridden her a little differently in England. Having known her, he might have been placed a little more forwardly. And that's certainly not a knock on O'Shane. He gave her a great ride. But I just think, you know, Manny knowing the filly is a big plus.
Yeah, certainly helpful. Invisible Gal is entered out west and here at Aqueduct. Did she make the trip out west, or is she going to run tomorrow here at the Big A?
No, she did not make the trip out west, so she'll be a scratch today. You know, we drew the 14 hole in the Breeders' Cup. We came back and drew the 13 hole out west, and it just didn't make sense to ship her all the way out there for that. So this was kind of plan B, and I think it's probably worked out for the better. Jose gets to ride her back, which is a big plus. I feel good about running it tomorrow.
Yeah, she'll be here at Acura. She runs into a good-looking second-time starter from Belmont, Lovestruck. But you two certainly seem to that certainly seems to be the run of the race tomorrow, I think, anyway, in the Teppan.
Yeah, I mean, she hasn't done much wrong, this filly. You know, maybe the Breeders' Cup was a little stretch. I thought she was really at a disadvantage being on the outside. It kind of kept her from being able to get in the race. This is a more realistic spot for her.
Talking with trainer Graham Motion. So, Graham, one of the other things, you are one of the great ambassadors of the sport, especially on social media. I think a lot of people, save the idiots to tell you to stick to horse racing. I think you are one of the better ambassadors that we have, especially as a voice on social media. The games had an unusual year, and earlier in the year, I think some strides were made in early March to kind of get this game pointed again in the right direction. We didn't miss a card all year, even with the COVID outbreak. And you're a guy that runs your horses. You certainly, it didn't seem like the stable missed much of a beat over there. Just talk about this year in general. And for me, somebody like me who's been around it my whole life like you, I feel like I'm very hopeful after a year like this.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, first of all, I think we've been incredibly fortunate to keep racing. I mean, we maybe missed a month or so back in the early spring, but, you know, I mean, a lot of people deserve a lot of credit for keeping us going. And the fact that they were able to pull off the Breeders' Cup, I think, was remarkable. Having said that, you know, it hasn't been easy. I mean, I'm doing some things this year that I'm very uncomfortable with. You know, when we run horses in Toronto, for example, I can't send any help to Canada. When we ran horse at Belmont in the spring, I wasn't able to send any of my help. So I'm incredibly lucky that, you know, David Donk took the wheel for me in New York. And really, you know, that's not something that I normally do. It's a bit out of my comfort zone, but I couldn't have done it without somebody like like David, and then Renee has handled my horses up in Canada. So, look, it's been a year of awkwardness. I feel like, you know, even, you know, with my own help, I've worried about my own health's well-being, and I worry about my guys going on the road. But everybody's stepped up. Nobody's complained. I feel very fortunate. I think we're incredibly lucky in racing that we've been able to keep going when you see what's going on in the rest of the country and how much some people are suffering.
Yeah, and you talk about the thing that gives me hope is, and again, just, you know, somebody that grew up on the backstretch and as a racetrack kid, if you will, right? You got a couple of racetrack kids of your own, so you know where I'm coming from. You're sending horses to Dave. Dale was on earlier. He talked about how Attachment Rate, who's running in the Discovery today, he came up to Carlos Martin. You know, and I know it's going the other way as well. Carlos had that filly Pietti Bianchi from my friend Jay, sent her out, and Tom Amos took care of her at Indiana Grand. It's everybody. Yeah, you guys are all competing for the same wins and the same money, but you're also helping each other along at the same time, at a time where everybody could use a little help.
Yeah, and isn't that the unique thing about our sport? I mean, the fact that, you know, as competitive as we all are, whether it's the jocks in the jockstrom or trainers on the backstretch, I mean, although we're all incredibly competitive, I do think, as a whole, we like to look out for each other, and I think that's really, you know, that's really come to light this year where people have, you know, gone beyond the call for each other.
Yeah, no question about it. Everybody's done a really good job just pitching in and keeping the wheels on the bus go round and round, I guess, is probably not the most eloquent, but probably the best way to put it. Graham, thanks for some time this morning. Best of luck around the country next couple of days. Enjoy the holiday season. I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
You too. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Graham Motion. He's got sharing tomorrow in that matriarch. Out where the turf meets the surf. Closing weekend at Churchill. Closing weekend at Del Mar as well. They'll wrap it up with a couple of grade ones. The Hollywood Derby today, the Matriarch tomorrow. We'll take a break. When we come back, our own Bobby Newman. You can hear Bobby with me each and every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday on Race Day, presented by Twin Spires from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Friday nights on the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts from 6 to 7 Eastern. In fact, we encourage you to go take a listen to the Weekend Stakes Preview podcast over at horseracingradio.net when we wrap the Equine Forum in just about 45 minutes or so. When we come back, Bobby's going to jump on. We'll talk about a couple of those grade ones out west and let him pick one more he likes to talk about. Bobby's been on a pretty good roll with the stakes races as of late. We'll see if he has any kind of good tidbits for us this morning. You're listening to the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Catholic boy, one of only three American three-year-old colts in history to win grade ones on both dirt and turf, including the immortal Secretariat. A six-time graded stakes winner from ages 2 to 4, he was the fastest three-year-old of his crop over 10 furlongs. In foal to Catholic boy, the Dam of Swiss Skydiver sold for $950,000. Dual surface grade one winner Catholic boy, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Churchill Downs hosts their 131st fall meet running through Sunday, November 29th. Highlights include the 146th running of the Grade 1 Clark presented by Norton Healthcare on Black Friday, November 27th, and a second Stars of Tomorrow program on Saturday, November 28th, featuring the Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club and Grade 2 Goldenrod. In total, the fall meet showcases 10 stakes races, 8 of those graded, offering purses of nearly $1.8 million. Big money, big fields. October 25th to November 29th at Churchill Downs.
Hey, it's Corey Lannery. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Decorated Invader getting closer in second. Get smoking. The lead is now 2.5 lengths.
the decorated invader in second, then ever dangerous moon over Miami and domestic spending, and the field is in the stretch. It is get smoking on the inside and decorated invader on the outside. From the back of the pack, it's domestic spending who is putting in a late run here. It's get smoking, decorated invader, and then domestic spending, decorated invader has taken the lead, a deep stretch, and he's 3 for 3 as a 3-year-old. Decorated Invader the winner. It was close for second between the pace setter Get Smokin' and domestic spending.
My main man Johnny I on the call. The Hall of Fame up at the spa. Decorated Invader looking for his first win since later on today in that Grade 1 Hollywood Derby out at Del Mar. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRR. And before we bring in Bobby Newman, it's time now for the KTA-KTOB Spotlight. They want to remind you that there's no better time to breed and race in Kentucky. Kentucky-bred horses have topped the leading sire list each of the last 11 years and dominate the standings once again in 2020. Leading the way is Into Mischief, who has already set a North American single-season progeny earnings record in 2020, eclipsing the previous mark set by Kentucky-bred stallion Tappet. In addition to Kentucky's record-breaking sire power, lucrative incentives, more than $170 million has been distributed to Kentucky-bred since 2006, and purse money of more than $118 million at Kentucky's tracks this year. It means there's no better time to breed and race in Kentucky. For more information on basing your thoroughbred operation in the Bluegrass State, visit KentuckyBreds.com. From Kentucky-breds to a California-bred, Bobby Newman, my co-host here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, most hours of the week, joins us now from the South Florida studios. Good morning, Mr. Newman. How are you today?
Doing well, my friend. How's everything in New York?
Well, we can't complain. Everything's good. had a fun show so far this morning. All about the teamwork. The horsemen have shown each other, and the racetracks down in Kentucky have shown each other through this unusual year. You and I know all about that. We've been doing race day and the weekend stakes preview together for the better part of 9 months now, and we've never met.
Well, that's bound to change at some point, and I'm guessing when things get back to normal, COVID-wise, and people are allowed at the racetracks in New York, you'll probably see me up there.
Well, and I look forward to that. I look forward to that. Bobby sending me inappropriate text messages at 12:54 in the morning, and by inappropriate, I mean a hero shop in Bensonhurst asking me if I have ever had any sandwiches from there. That's just inappropriate to do to a guy at 5-1. But anyway, I digress. We got some good stakes action. A couple of the bigger tracks giving it one last go this weekend. Del Mar and Churchill closing their doors, and briefly, a place that's near and dear to your heart, closing forever, Calder. You were the voice of Calder for a decade in front of the screen for another 5 or 6 years down there. Give us a couple of thoughts about Calder as they close their doors today for the final time.
Well, it's sad when any racetrack closes its doors, but when you work at a track for as long as I did, it really hits home. It was a situation back in 2014 where Churchill Downs made the decision to basically focus on casino gaming and not racing at Calder. And it made sense from a money standpoint. It didn't feel good if you were working at Calder, but if it made total sense. The casino brings in a lot more money than the racetrack did. But the racetrack was near and dear to so many people's hearts, especially here in South Florida, from all the way back in 1971. When it was first established by Stephen Calder, all the way through, I think, June 30th of 2014. And that's when basically Gulfstream started running year-round or operating the racing year-round. A lot of great racing, a lot of great horses that went through Calder, a lot of two-year-olds developed at Calder that went on to bigger and better things, a lot of really good horses that at some point raced at Calder and maybe went on to national greatness. Princess Rooney, who was the first ever Breeders' Cup Distaff winner, began her career at Calder. Smile,
raced at Calder, beginning of his career. Spend a Buck, the 1985 Derby winner. His first several races were at Calder for trainer Ken Gambolotti. You've seen two-year-olds like Blind Luck and Mucho Macho Man, who started their careers at Calder, were sold privately, and went on to greatness nationwide. Of course, Blind Luck winning the Kentucky Oaks, among things, and Mucho Macho Man winning the Breeders' Cup Classic a few years later. You've seen horses like Orientate, Cajun Beat, Cherokee Run, Big Drama, all winning stakes races during the Summit of Speed at Calder and going on to win the Breeders' Cup Sprint. So a lot of really, really good memories. Maybe the best horse I saw during the time I was there, Lost in the Fog, as fast a sprinter as we've seen in the last 20 years. And we got to see him a couple times at Calder. He won once and he lost once. And it was a fun place to be.
Yeah, I'm sure I was never got a chance. I drove by where they raced one of the times I was down in Florida, but I never had a chance to visit. I know it was a place that you have a lot of fond memories of, and a lot of people, including yourself, would be sad to see it go this afternoon. Let's try and cheer you up and the nation up and the folks that love Calder with some winners. We covered 14 races last night on the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts. Again, after the Equine Forum wraps in about 35 minutes, head on over to horseracingradio.net. Give it a listen. Let's talk a little bit about that Hollywood Derby today. Talk about a couple of the grade ones. We've got a couple of grade ones left this weekend. Of course, the grade one Cigar Mile next Saturday at the Big A. This race today, and there's three stakes today, two tomorrow at Del Mar, as they wrap up the Bing Crosby meet and the 2020 season. This race today has a little bit of an East Coast, West Coast feel. You got a couple of Christophe Clement runners and Decorated Invader and Gufo heading out west, along with one for Chad Brown, Domestic Spending. Field of 13, it wraps up the Saturday card, 9 race card, 10 tomorrow. Let's talk about this Hollywood Derby a little bit, Bobby.
Well, to me, it's one of the more evenly matched races of the weekend, of those stakes that we looked at. And you mentioned it's East Coast versus West Coast. For the home court advantage, Smooth Like Straight for trainer Michael McCarthy, 7-2 on the morning line, has won 3 of his last 4 starts, including the Twilight Derby at Santa Anita. He's 2-for-2 on the turf at Del Mar. Scardo is another horse who's run very well at Del Mar and is up and coming. He was 2nd to Smooth Like Straight in that Twilight Derby. Storm the Court, who, of course, was the upset winner of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile back in 2019. He actually ran a pretty good second behind Smooth Like Straight in the Grade 3 La Jolla at Del Mar, the only time he's tried the turf. But they're taking on some pretty good runners from the East Coast. And a lot of these horses that have been running against each other in races like the Saratoga Derby Invitational or the Hall of Fame, you have Decorated Invader, you have Gufo, and you have... Also in there, you have Domestic Spending. On paper, it looks very even between those 5, 6, maybe 7 runners. I just happen to think, it's just a gut feeling, that the turf racing on the East Coast this year has been stronger than that on the West Coast. Now, I'm sure there are people on the East Coast who say, well, that's every year. You can say that the turf racing is better on the East Coast. I don't necessarily think that's true. I think with the reduction in horses in Southern California and the purses not being as high in Southern California as they are out on the East Coast and specifically in New York, you get more horses on the East Coast, you get the better horses on the East Coast, and for the most part, you're getting better riders. Maybe not every rider, but the jockey colony, you know, the top 10 on the East Coast, I think, is much stronger than the top 10 on the West Coast right now. So I'm leaning a little bit toward those horses that are coming from the New York area. We've already seen the New York runners doing very, very well as they've shipped over to Del Mar. And not only the New York runners, but we've seen the New York jockeys seemingly winning everything this week at Del Mar. Joel Rosario won aboard Arklow yesterday. Irad Ortiz has won a few races. Manny Franco has won at least a race or two out at Del Mar. So these guys are dominating out there. And at this distance of a mile and an eighth, I don't see any reason that Domestic Spending can't run another good race. He's 3-for-4
in his career. Last time we saw him, he was an upset winner of the Saratoga Derby Invitational. And you and I both, you know, agree he shouldn't have been 7-1 that day. He was way bigger of a price than he really should have been. He's never run a bad race in his career. He's had time off since that race. That race was in mid-August. Normally, I would think that, you know, he could need a race, but being that he's trained by Chad Brown, I would think that he'll fire a huge shot off this layoff. As I mentioned, Irad Ortiz has already won a few races at Del Mar. He knows what it's like out there. He's back aboard domestic spending. 5-1 on the morning line, I think that's the way I would have to key.
Yeah, he's 5-1 on the morning line. I thought it was the two Chad and the two Clement horses, Decorated Invader and Gufo as well. I feel like at the mile and an eighth, Decorated Invader is probably completely stretched. And the one time that they faced at the mile and an eighth, he beat Domestic Spending, but I think that was just more of a trip. Domestic Spending was last in a field of five in a paceless race, and Decorated Invader was just sitting second to the loose leader. Now, Get Smoking came back and turned the tables in the Hill Prince on Decorated Invader at the mile on the yielding. This is going to be a little bit different today. 9 furlongs, some firm ground. It should be a very interesting renewal of this Grade 1 Hollywood Derby tomorrow. The Matriarch is the Grade 1. Just full disclosure, my man, I don't know if you were listening earlier, but Graham Motion joined us just before you did. Wooten Asset is part of that late pick 5 and late pick 4, and they have a mandatory pick 6 payout tomorrow at Del Mar as well. It's a 50-cent wager out there. And they've been waiting to get Wooten Asset on some firm ground, and he's going to get that tomorrow. That goes as race 7, but race number 9 goes to that Matriarch. And sharing for Graham Motion, going to try the older fillies. Chad Brown sends out Blowout and Viadera and Tamahir. Juliet Foxtrot comes in from Brad Cox. So, again, a little East Coast, West Coast. And here's another one. My East Coast bias coming out, but I think the East Coast horses will hold the edge here as well.
Yeah, the East Coast horses have just been so good, and I'm really interested in seeing what a filly like Sharing does. I'm interested in watching Viadera, seeing if she can continue her good ways. We haven't seen her in a little bit of time. It's a really interesting renewal. First of all, pace wise, you have what looks like a clear front runner in Blowout. And the funny thing was, Blowout, when she began her career, was not a front running type. She was a filly who was definitely able to close and close well, but she's turned into a front running type. Now she's getting Flavien Prat for the first time. I don't know what that means as far as her trip, because Prat has never been on her. He is, in my mind, by far the best rider that's based in Southern California right now. But she's going from one Hall of Fame rider to a guy who could be eventually a Hall of Fame rider. John Velasquez has been the normal rider at Blowout. He is not out there to ride these races. He rode in Kentucky this weekend, so Flavien Prat rides for the first time. Blowout was the 2-1 favorite when she got beat by Viadera in the Grade 3 Noble Damsel last time out back in September at Belmont. Viadera is just, she has been amazing. And it's not so much, not that she's been amazing in her last two starts. The timing of the rides that Joel Rosario has put on Viadera in both the Della Rose and the Noble Damsel has been like a clinic. I mean, it's uncanny how he and she know where the wire is, because that's the only time that Viadera is in front, is at the wire, winning by a neck in both of those races. I think she's going to have some pace to run at once again on Sunday. I think that if she runs the same type of race Sunday that she did in the Noble Damsel, she's good enough to win. She went the mile that day in 132 flat, which is super fast, but it was a turf course at Belmont that was playing fast. Still very, very impressive. 7-2 on Viadera, the shortest price you're going to see thus far since she's been in the States, but she's going to be tough. Now, that being said, the 3-year-old filly Sharing, who's trying her elders for the first time, has done almost nothing wrong in her career. She has 5 wins, a second and a third from 7 career starts. And her win in the Edgewood last time out at Churchill against three-year-old fillies was super impressive. If she runs like that again, she definitely could challenge Riadera. It's one of those things where I don't think I can single one of them. I'm hoping in the horizontal plays to find something else earlier because I would hate to leave one of those two fillies out. They're both super, super good.
Yeah, one, maybe two more that you like today anywhere around the country or tomorrow?
Well, I'm really hoping that we get to see, I'm really hoping that we finally get to see Lovestruck run in the Teppan on Sunday at Aqueduct. She's not going to be a big price. She's 7-5 on the morning line. I don't know what's going on with this filly. This Bill Mott trainee was very impressive breaking her maiden at Saratoga at a mile and a 16th. She's been entered two or three times since then in stake races that, in my mind, were tougher than what she's going to be in Sunday. And I thought she had big chances in those races, and she's scratched. And haven't really read about it. There hasn't been a story. Obviously, it wasn't anything so bad that she's not still being entered and still training. I think you just have to kind of put your trust in Bill Mott, saying, you know what, when she shows up, she's going to be fit and ready to go. I thought her maiden win was great. I don't see why she can't be better now in November than she was in her debut in September. I don't know if it's going to be something that we can really make a lot of money on, but I'm really looking forward to watching Lovestruck come back to the races.
Yeah, I know we both like Bill Mott's runner in the Discovery today, Forza d'Oro.
Forza d'Oro, that, I'll tell you what, the Discovery today, Anthony, for a five-horse race is about as good a five-horse field as you're going to get. You have one long shot on the morning line. That's Ralston, and he's going to be a major player at least early on in the race because he's got a lot of speed. He's a horse who's been running in South Florida at Gulfstream and at Calder, and his last win was at Calder in wire-to-wire fashion. I don't think he's quite good enough to beat this field, but he's certainly good enough to be there in the early going. The other four are very, very good. Morning line favorite Shared Sense has won two of his last three starts, both of them grade three efforts, the Indiana Derby and the Oklahoma Derby. Monday Morning Quarterback coming off a big win at Laurel, going a mile and an eighth last time out. He went up 148 flat, very fat, very solid time for the mile and an eighth. Attachment Rate got back to his winning ways. He hadn't won since he broke his maiden back in March at Aqueduct. They've been trying him basically in graded stakes most of his career, and he's been running pretty well against horses like Max Field and Art Collector, and he even ran in the Derby behind Authentic. Well, they put him back in an allowance race, got him a confidence builder last time out, and he got back to his winning ways. But Forza d'Oro, the way he came back off that long layoff last time out for Bill Mott, I thought was great. He was 10-1. He didn't break all that well, and he just put it all together. His first two starts of his career were very, very good. I don't know what happened to him when they tried him in the Remsen. He was only 5-1 that day, and he basically ran for about 7 furlongs of that mile and an eighth and then just packed it in. Obviously, something was amiss with him because that race was December of 19. He didn't return to the races until October of 2020. But he returned to the races better than when he left. That race off the layoff was super, super good. I know he only won by a neck, but that was a good field of older horses that day. Fast time, mile and a 16th, 1 minute, 41 seconds flat. If he runs that same type of race today in the Discovery or even improves second start off the layoff, he's easily as good, if not better, than anyone in this field. And he probably won't be favored. He's 2-1 on the morning line. I trust in morning line maker David Aragona up in New York. He laid Shared Sense the 3-2 favorite because he's got a couple of graded stakes wins. I can definitely see that, but Forza d'Oro, in my mind, is easily as good as the morning line favorite, if not better.
Yeah, I'm with you, my man. Forza d'Oro for us in the Discovery. Bobby, thanks for some time this morning. We'll talk to you on Wednesday for race day, a little Gulfstream and a little Tampa Bay Downs.
All right, buddy. Have a great weekend.
All right, one and only Bobby Newman, Thanks to Bobby for joining us for a little bit here on this Saturday morning. We'll take a break, come back. Trainer Hugh McMahon going to join us. Just got the 1,000th and 1,001st wins of his career. We'll talk to him about that milestone when we return. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Adena Spring Stallion Mucho Macho Man. Tough, sound, durable. A stakes winner at 3, 4, 5, and 6 who competed in all three Triple Crown races before turning 3 years old and capped a stellar career with a determined victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic over champions Will Take Charge and Declaration of War.
Mucho Macho Man has the lead close to home. Mucho Macho Man, Declaration of War. Will Take Charge and Final Man. Mucho Macho Man.
Mucho Macho Man has produced two first crop grade one winners, one on dirt.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup. He won it by 5 lengths.
And one on turf.
And the California bred Mucho Unusual all the way in the Rodeo Drive.
The number one North American sire by 2020 average earnings per runner is Mucho Macho Man, standing at Adena Springs.
The championship season returns to Gulfstream Park this December. Thoroughbred stakes action returns with the claiming crown, the Fort Lauderdale, the Grade 1 $3 million Pegasus World Cup, the Fountain of Youth Stakes, the Grade 1 Florida Derby, and much, much more. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with the First Bet app, the official app of Gulfstream Park. First Bet offers AI-predicted picks, high-definition live stream races, replays, live betting from the palm of your hand.
In 1993, Dr. John West showed that EIPH occurs during exercise when blood vessels in the lungs rupture. This is due to stress caused by high blood pressure on the inside of the vessels and strong suction forces on the outside. Only flare strips and Lasix, used together or alone, have been clinically proven to reduce EIPH. Lasix works by reducing the high internal pressures, and flare strips work by reducing the suction forces on the outside. See the science at flarestrips.com.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Turning for home now, Gotta Flat Haver kicks on. Gotta Flat Haver turns in with a 2-length lead. Polish Gal out the center of the track, trying to level off with that final furlong. Polish Gal on the outside, Gotta Flat Haver down to the inside. Splendor Gal is third, and the inside there, backing off there, is Midnight Crossing, final 16th of a mile, and it's Polish Gal just in front. Splendor Gal on the outside, which Gal is it? Polish Gal, Splendor Gal. Could be win number 1,000 for training Hugh McMahon. Polish Gal, Splendor Gal on the photo on the outside. And Gotta Flat Haver was third.
Dave Rodman on the call. Less than a week ago, Polish Gal got her nose down on the line to give our next guest the 1,000th training win of his career. Hugh McMahon joins us now from the Mid-Atlantic. Hey, you, Anthony Stabile here on the Equine Forum. Congratulations, and thanks for some time this morning on the program.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't remember the bug boy, Hugh McMahon, who was buzzing around the Big Apple and Aqueduct the winter of 92 and 93. Talk a little about your time in the saddle.
Well, I remember an agent by the name of Steve Giuliano taking me in. It was a kind of a strange transition. I went from Tampa Bay, and Johnny Velasquez had just finished his bug, and I think Bob Casares was one of the contenders, and he was riding for him, and they were looking for a bug boy. And so they called me up there, and like I say, I got hooked up with Steve Giuliano, and took me under his wing and got me one of those equisizers. And Angel Cordero, and just a strong colony of riders there. Jerry Bailey, Chris Antley, Julie Crone. You know, to have an apprenticeship in the midst of those riders, you know, you end up walking away with something. So experience was really good there.
Yeah, I remember my dad was an agent back then. He had Julio Pazua and then Filberto Leon. And yeah, you had a good winter here. Yeah, Bob Klisaris. That's right. I forgot about the Bob Klisaris and Steve Giuliani connection. Almost 60 winners in your career. Needless to say, a lot more success as a trainer. Congratulations. 1,000 wins. That's a pretty neat milestone.
Yeah, very thankful. So I remember your dad, and Julio Pazua. Yeah, that's a blast from the past.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. You stopped riding in the late 90s, started training about 6 or 7 years later, but things have really picked up this past decade. You've won a little over 900 of the 1,001 now, right? You won one yesterday?
Yeah. Divine intervention.
So we're working on the second 1,000. Yeah. What, how'd you get into the training side of the game?
You know, it's really funny. I was exercise riding for Scott Lake, and I would go, you know, all over the place. You know, I went to Florida, and I saw the chief, Alan Jerkins. He was on the back of his pony, and I had not seen him for years because I used to ride races for him. He kind of gave me a pretty good shot there when I had the bug in New York. And he asked me why I wasn't, you know, training or why I wasn't doing an assistant's job, and I didn't really think anything of it. And then that following year, the assistant for the Lake Division in Maryland, he got another opportunity, and it was a last minute thing. Scott Lake said to me, do you want to go be my assistant in Maryland? And I was, you know, stymied. I was like, well, I don't know anything about it. I've only ever been on the back of a horse. But he was like, oh, you'll be okay. And I remember just kind of like, you know, jumping right into the thick of it, and they had to like take my trainer's test. I read a little bit of the condition book at the back, and I think I just passed the test with the skin of my teeth. And it was one of those kind of, you know, it's like when you're riding races as a bug boy, you got the full cut blinkers, and you only see so much of the race, and then you go to like the three quarters, and then you go to the cheaters, and then the blinkers are off, and you can see the entire race. You know, the more you ride, and it was kind of like that with the training. I just had a very narrow perspective, and you know, the more time I spent on the ground, the more I was being the hands, the eyes and ears for Scott Lake, the more I absorbed.
Having been a race rider and obviously still, an exercise rider, it has to give you an edge to be able to get. Do you still get on your horses, Hugh?
Occasionally, if one of the riders doesn't show up, you know, sometimes I'll throw on my chaps and get on there.
That has to give you a big edge, right? To be able to get on top of them and actually, you know, I'm sure, you know, exercise riders usually are very good at conveying their message to the trainers, but I can't imagine anything's better than being able to experience the message yourself.
Yeah, that dynamic is definitely necessary. Being on the ground, I learned a lot being on the ground, you know, the observation of a horse. And you know, Scott Lake kind of trained my eye to look at the horse and not so much the rider. You can see how the horse is balanced and, you know, and how he's moving and how comfortable he is and stuff. And, Yeah, but there's something, you know, significantly more when you're on the back of a horse and the horse is telling you something and you can't really identify it from the ground or, you know, when you get the vet over to have a look at it. So, yeah, it does give you an edge.
You think back to that day when you're on, you know, when you're getting ready to jog or gallop one or breeze one, and you see the chief, and the chief puts this in your head, and then Scott comes with that suggestion and job offer. You ever think back to that day and say to yourself, wow, I've won 1,000 races now as a trainer?
Yeah, I you know, this past decade or so has been, well, you know, God's so good to me. You know, he's just, I'm a Christian. I Psalm 139, you know, my life is ordained. There's the path that you walk and you make plans, but God directs them. And I've seen his hand in so many aspects and areas of my life along the way. What would seem to be a disastrous situation, you know, something beautiful has come from that. And that's kind of the way it's been, you know. And we go through the peaks and the valleys in life, you know, you go through the highs and lows, but it's like I take a little history tour and I think, wow, I've always been clothed, I've always been fed, I've always had a, you know, shelter, and, you know, that's true of my family. And, you know, through the good times and through the bad times, it's all good. Ultimately, it's good, you know. Even the what would seem to be bad works together for good. So,
looking forward to working on the next 1,000.
I'm very thankful right now. Very appreciative of what I have.
That's great. You looking forward to working on the next 1,000?
You know, I'm prayerful for the industry. It seems to be under threat, and you know, I just think, you know, we need to do a little more. We need to be more vocal, you know, in what we do back here. You know, I've witnessed these people standing outside the tracks in protest, you know, but I can't emphasize enough of, you know, how much care goes on to a thoroughbred on a racetrack. You know, the care factor, you know, the love. And if you was to bring one of these people in and see the intensive care program that's involved, you know, fresh stall of hay or shavings every day, you know, clean water buckets, you know, 4 times a day, the you know, the food. It's a high-profile, you know, food program. And, you know, the dentist, the blacksmith every month, there's just so much. And you've got a vet just working alongside you. Should there be anything wrong, he's there on hand. And, you know, how many other creatures get this kind of treatment? And not to mention the love. People end up getting attached to these horses. And, you know, there's a relationship. And I think God had designed that. They've been a compliment to us since the beginning of time.
Well said. Well said, Hugh. Well said. Well, here's to continued success. Good luck working on that next 1,000, and I'm sure we'll talk to you down the line.
All right. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Hugh McMahon just celebrated the 1,000th win of his career. Like all of our guests, you will receive some apparel from Embrace the Race. Embrace your passion over at EmbraceTheRace.com. We'll take one more break, come back, and wrap this final November edition of the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
And they're into the stretch with Spongeron, the wonder catch, coming to the eight pole. Spongeron drifting out with the lead. Blue Chipper on the inside is second. Omaha Beach has made his way up into third, but Spongeron has run away. Herod Ortiz and Spongeron, the real deal of the dirt mile. They won it by 3.5 lengths.
Gainsway Stallion, Spongeron. In the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, he defeated a loaded field that included multiple Grade 1 winners, Omaha Beach and Improbable. His brilliant speed figures were among the fastest of any three-year-old at a mile or more, while earning multiple triple-digit buyers up to 110 and running a zero on the thoroughgrass five times. Spun to Run hails from the legendary Danzig Sire line, a multiple graded stakes winner, millionaire, and Breeders' Cup champion. Great milers make great stallions. Spun to Run, standing at Gainesway.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. Don't forget, I'm going to wrap up in about 3 minutes here. You can head over to horseracingradio.net. Take a listen to the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts, Bobby Newman, and I. 14 races in all. Aqueduct, Churchill, and Del Mar, the latter two, wrapping up their meets this weekend, tomorrow to be exact. Calder and all the great memories down in the South Florida track for, well, almost 50 years. They're going to close for the final time today. Best of luck to all the horsemen and women who will scatter about. Most of them will stay down there, but I'm sure everybody's sad to see them close the doors over at Calder, now known as Gulfstream Park West. And best of luck to everybody who was involved, and sad to see the place go. Our poll question this morning, your favorite post-Breeders' Cup racing weekend. And as he did 16 times in a row, Cigars fending them all off. This is a tight poll this morning. Good job, HRR Nation. 35.1% has Cigar Mile Day. 33.3%, Clark Weekend, 31.6%, Santa Anita Opening Day, we have a comment. Willow Creek Farm says, Clark Weekend to include Stars of Tomorrow card, looking for the next generation. That's today. 12 races down at Churchill Downs today. Post time's 1 o'clock. You can catch all of the Aqueduct and Churchill Downs action on America's Day at the Races today. And we'll be back live and in color. Well, not really in color, but we'll be back live on Wednesday with Race Day presented by Twin Spires. Bobby and I will have action from Gulfstream Park and Tampa Bay Downs. Gulfstream Park opening day this Wednesday. They've been going Friday, Saturday opening days as of late, but this year they're going to open up on Wednesday. Cards should be out today. And look forward to getting into the Gulfstream Park action. A little Tampa Bay Downs action as well, and count down the days, just a week away from the Cigar Mile. about a month till opening day, out at the Great Race Place. Thanks to all our guests this morning, Ben Huffman, trainers Dale Romans, Graham Motion, and Hugh McMahon, our very own Bobby Newman, and our Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris, Old Friends Farm, and their founder, Michael Blowen. Old Friends, equine.org, to donate to one of the best charities around. They do a lot for our retired equine warriors. Thanks to you, HRR Nation, for tuning in. Hope everybody had a safe and healthy Thanksgiving. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Enjoy all of the great action across the country today. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile. I hope you have a lucky night. I hope you win all your photo finishes. We'll talk to you Wednesday.